Khan waved frantically, and the wave speeder veered toward him, coming alongside. Leia leaped off the vehicle as Akbar lashed it to a ragged stump of torn metal. She walked confidently, then ran, keeping her balance as she flung herself into Han's arms. He hugged her against his chest as he kissed her again and again. "I'm so glad you're safe." She looked at him. "I know." "Stop that," Han said. "I'm serious. Dalla did this, didn't she?"
"We think so, but we have no proof yet."
He cut her off. "No question in my mind about it. Dalla has no political motives. She just wants to destroy things." The female Calamarian climbed out of the wave speeder and went to the triage area, glancing at the bleeding Calamarians as far too few medics attempted to tend them. She walked among the injured, making quick pronouncements, as if she could somehow determine their chances for survival. Two medics worked desperately to resuscitate a Quarren whose arm had been amputated and his chest crushed. She took one glance and said, "He won't survive, and you can do nothing more to make him survive." The two Calamarian healers looked at her and, seeing the absolute conviction on her face, moved to another patient and let the Quarren die. Like an angel of life and death, she walked among them, staring down, tilting her head and swiveling her round Calamarian eyes from side to side. Han watched her as she moved. "Who is that?"
"Her name is Kilgal. She's the Calamarian ambassador," Leia said, then lowered her voice. "I think she has Jedi powers. She doesn't know it yet. I'm going to make sure she goes to see Luke."
Leia hugged her husband again.
"I'm so glad you came."
"I was on my way the moment I heard," Han answered. He cocked an eyebrow as he looked at Lando. "By the way, we played another little game of sabacc en route. This time I won." He offered an arm to his wife. "Would you like a ride home in my ship, Leia?"
"The Falcon's yours again," she said with delight,
then slipped her arm through his. Still grinning, she looked at Lando.
"Sorry to hear that, Lando."
He shrugged. "It was one way to get him off my back." Akbar climbed out of the skimmer and stood on the rocking wreckage. He raised one broad hand to shield his lumpy brow as he looked over the scattered debris of Reef Home City. Han had never been good at telling expressions on the Calamarian admiral's face, but Akbar seemed devastated. He went to where Akbar stood all alone. "Admiral," Han said, "I heard what you did, how you defeated an entire Star Destroyer. Great work." Leia moved beside him in her white robes.
"Admiral, your victory here must make up for the simple accident on Vortex. I hope you aren't considering going back into hiding."
Akbar shook his massive head. "No, Leia. You've reminded me of one thing with your friendly insistence. I am not the type of person who can hide. I must do what I can, and as much as I can. Hiding is for others. Action is for myself." Leia placed a hand on the Admiral's thick bicep.
"Thank you, Admiral. The New Republic needs you," she said.
But Akbar shook his head. "No, Leia. I won't be returning to Coruscant. After this attack, I can see just how much my own people need me. I must stay here on Calamari to help my people rebuild, to strengthen their civilization, and to tighten their defenses against future Imperial strikes. We still have not recovered from the onslaught of the World Devastators, and now a new fleet has laid waste to our floating cities. I can't just leave Calamari now and go back." He turned his circular eyes up into the leaden sky and said, "This planet is my home. These are my people. I must devote my energies to helping them." Han slipped his arm around Leia's waist and squeezed her. She felt stiff and cold. He knew exactly what she was thinking.
"I understand, Akbar,"
Leia said, finally dropping his military title. Han could sense her tension, knowing how the loss of Akbar devastated her. Han gripped her shoulder, feeling iron cords of tension rippling beneath her smooth skin. With Akbar's refusal to return to Coruscant, and with Mon Mothma growing weaker day by day, that meant Leia had to face all the problems of the New Republic alone. 23. Daylight shone through the rectangular skylights of the Great Temple. Kip sat on an uncomfortable stone bench in the Grand Audience Chamber, listening to Master Skywalker. He pretended to pay attention, though it became more and more difficult as his opinion of Skywalker's knowledge dwindled. The other Jedi trainees sat in rapt attention as Master Skywalker placed the small white holocron on its pedestal. It told yet another story of the ancient Jedi Knights, extolling their heroic adventures, their battles against the dark side, all ultimately ineffectual because the Emperor and Darth Vader had been stronger than the Jedi Knights, squashing them. Skywalker refused to learn from that failure. If he meant to bring the new Jedi Knights to greater power, he would have to recognize new abilities, make his order of Jedi Knights powerful enough to resist a purge like Vader's. Exar Kun had shown Kip the ways of the Sith, but Master Skywalker would never adopt those teachings. Kip wondered why he bothered to keep listening to Skywalker. He seemed so weak, so indecisive. The other students were a potential wellspring of strength. They had learned how to tap the Force, but they had gone no further than a novice level, mere magicians, play-acting in a role that was too big for any of them. They refused to peek behind the doors of greater power. But Kip was not afraid. He could handle the responsibility. Another holographic gatekeeper of the holocron appeared and began telling the story of how young Yoda had become a Jedi. Kip stifled a yawn, unable to understand why they had to keep watching these trivial histories. He craned his neck to look at the walls of the enormous stone temple. In his mind, he tried to imagine the great Sith War 4,000 years ago. He thought of the damp-skinned Masasi race enslaved by Exar Kun, used by him as tools to build the temples that he had reconstructed from even more ancient and forgotten Sith records. Kun had revitalized the dark teachings, granting himself the title of Dark Lord of the Sith, a tradition passed down all the way to Darth Vader, who had been the last Sith Lord. Exar Kun's temples had been erected across Yavin 4, the last archaeological resting place of the incredibly ancient Sith race, as focal points for his power. Kun had ruled here on the jungle moon, controlling forces that had nearly defeated the Old Republic. But the warlord Jedi Ulik Kel-Droma had betrayed him, and all the United Jedi had swept down in a final battle on Yavin 4, exterminating the Masasi natives, leveling most of the Sith temples, raising most of the rainforest in a holocaust from the skies. But Exar Kun had managed to ensist his spirit here, waiting 4,000 years until other Jedi came to awaken him. Kip fidgeted and pretended to pay attention. The temple chamber seemed extremely hot. The holocron droned on and on. Luke listened with a beatific smile, and the other students continued to observe the images. Kip gazed at the walls and wondered why he was there. As half-night fell across the jungles of Yavin 4, Luke Skywalker sat back and allowed himself to relax in one of the meeting halls. Smaller than the grand audience chamber, the hall had arched stone ceilings and polished tables, along with serviceable furniture left behind by the rebel occupation. Bright glow lamps hung in old torch sconces. Luke felt bone weariness seeping through his body and hunger gnawing in his stomach. For now, the students relaxed, recharging their mental energy. All day long, Luke had supervised them through force exercises, levitation training, visualizing battles and conflicts, sensing other animals and creatures in the forest, learning Jedi history from the holocron. He was pleased with how well they were doing. Though the death of Ganterus still felt like an open wound, he saw that his other students were making great progress. He felt confident in being able to bring back the Jedi Knights. One of the trainees, Tion, sat in the corner preparing to play a stringed musical instrument. Two hollow resonating boxes separated by a shaft strung with tonal cords. "This is the ballad of Nomi Sunrider," she said, "one of the historical Jedi Knights." She smiled. Long silvery hair streamed past her shoulders, hanging down to her chest and splitting like a white-capped river down her back. Her eyes were small and close-set, glinting with a mother-of-pearl sheen. Her nose was small, her jaw squarish. Luke thought she looked more exotic than beautiful. Tion had a great passion for the old Jedi legends and ballads and histories. Even before Luke found her, she had dedicated her life to resurrecting the old stories, digging them out of the archives and popularizing them. Luke had tested Tion's Jedi talent, and while her potential was perhaps less than the other students, she made up for it with absolute devotion and enthusiasm. The others found chairs, benches, or just a smooth spot on the floor to hear Tion sing.
She laid the instrument in her lap, and as the trainees listened, she plucked the strings with both hands, setting up an echoing music that fed and subtracted from her lyrics as she sang. Luke closed his eyes and heard her tale about young Nomi Sunrider, who, after her husband's murder, attended the Jedi training that had been meant for him. Nomi had become a pivotal character in the devastating Sith War that pitted Jedi against Jedi in the ancient days of the Old Republic. Luke smiled as he heard the music, the resonating notes, Tion's soft and watery voice as she sang with passion. From the far side of the room, Luke heard a restless stirring and turned to see Kip Duron, his face stormy with a scowl. The young man sighed, scowled again, and finally stood up, interrupting Tion's song. "I wish you wouldn't perpetuate that ridiculous story," Kip said. "Nomi Sunrider was a victim. She fought in the Sith Wars without ever understanding what the battles were about. She listened blindly to her Jedi masters, who were afraid because Exar Kun had discovered a way for the Jedi to increase their power." Tion set her musical instrument on the flagstones and gripped her knees through the fabric of her robe. Her face looked stricken, her small eyes glinting with confusion. "What are you talking about?" Her voice was thick with discouragement. "I've spent weeks reconstructing that legend. Everyone here knew what I was doing. If you had other information, Kip, why didn't you share it with me?" "Where did you learn all this history, Kip?" Luke said, standing up. He put his hands on his hips, trying to stare Kip down. The young man had become more and more volatile as he acquired Jedi knowledge. "Calm. You must be calm," Yoda had said. But Luke didn't know how to make Kip calm. Kip flashed his glance across the trainees, who looked at him in astonishment. "If the Sith War had turned out differently," he said, "perhaps the Jedi Knights would have learned how to defend themselves when Darth Vader came hunting, and they wouldn't all have been slaughtered. The Jedi would never have fallen, and we wouldn't be here taught by someone who doesn't know any more than we do." Luke remained adamant. "Kip, tell me where you learned all this." Kip pushed his lips together and narrowed his eyes. He drew several deep breaths, and Luke could sense the turmoil inside him as if his mind were working rapidly to come up with an answer. "I can use the holocron, too," he said. "As Master Skywalker keeps telling us, we are all obligated to learn everything we can." Luke didn't quite believe the young man's words, but before he could ask another question, R2 trundled in, warbling and chittering in alarm. Luke deciphered some of the electronic language. "No idea who it is," he said. R2 whistled a descending, hooting negative. "We have a visitor," Luke announced. "A ship is landing on the grid right now. Shall we go out to greet the pilot?" He turned to place a firm hand on Kip's shoulder, but the young man shrugged away. "We'll discuss this later, Kip." Relieved to have a distraction that would shatter the tension, Luke led the way. The other Jedi students followed him down the stone steps and through the hangar bay to the cleared landing grid. A small personal fighter, a Z-95 headhunter, a sleek metallic cruiser often used by smugglers, circled and eased down into the clearing. The other students stood at the edge of the grid, but Luke came forward. The cockpit doors swung up like the wings of a great insect, and the pilot emerged. Luke saw a sleek, silvery suit clinging to the curves of a young woman's body. She stepped down, pulled off an opaque helmet, and shook her dark reddish-brown hair. Her angular face had once been pinched with determination, but now seemed softened, her eyes wider, her full lips not entirely unaccustomed to a smile. "Mara Jade," Luke said. She tucked the helmet under her left arm, squeezing it against her rib cage. "Hello, Luke." She looked at him with just the hint of a friendly expression, then raised her eyebrows. "Or do I have to call you Master Skywalker now?" Luke shrugged, holding out his arms to welcome her. "That depends on why you're here." She let the headhunter open behind her as she strode across the clearing to take his hand in greeting. Then she swiveled in a military-style maneuver to survey the dozen students that had come to Luke's training center. "You told me I had the ability to use the Force," she said. "I came here to learn more about it. Jedi powers could help me run the Smugglers Guild." She unzipped a flexible pouch at her side and tugged out a packet of micro-compacted folds of cloth more than Luke could believe would fit inside a tiny package. She shook the brownish folds, unwrapping her garment. She looked at the identical garments on all of Luke's trainees and then back at him. "See," she said, "I even brought a Jedi robe." Over a generous meal of spiced runyip stew and bowls of chopped edible greens, Luke watched Mara Jade feed herself as if she were famished. Luke savored every bite, sensing the nutrients and energies as they slowly permeated his body.
"The New Republic is counting on your Jedi Knights, Luke, and things are getting much worse out there," she said.
Luke leaned forward, lacing his fingers together and trying to pick up echoes of her emotions.
"What's happening?" he said. "We're starved for news."
"Well," Mara Jade said, still chewing a mouthful of greens. She swallowed and took a drink of cold spring water, frowning at it as if she had expected something else.
"Admiral Dalla has continued her depredations. She doesn't seem to be allied with any of the Imperial warlords. From what we can tell, she's just trying to cause a lot of damage to anyone who opposed the Empire. And she is causing plenty of damage. You know that she has been hitting supply ships, blowing them out of space? She leveled the new colony on Dantooine."
"Dantooine," Luke said. Mara looked at him.
"Yes, isn't one of your students from that group of people?"
Luke sat rigid. Some of the trainees gasped in shock. His mind whirled, thinking of all the refugees he had helped relocate to a supposedly safe place from the treacherous world of Eol Shah. But now they had been wiped out.
"Not anymore," he said. "Ganterus died. He was unprepared for the powers he tried to use."
Mara Jade raised her thin eyebrows, waited for him to explain further. When Luke said nothing else, she continued.
"The worst part was when Dalla struck the planet Calamari. Seems she meant to take out the orbiting shipyards, but Admiral Akbar recognized her tactics. He blew up one of her three star destroyers, but Dalla still managed to sink two Calamarian floating cities. Countless thousands died."
Kip Duron stood at the far end of the long table. "Dalla lost another one of her star destroyers?" Mara Jade looked at him as if noticing the young dark-haired man for the first time.
"She still has two star destroyers and no inhibitions. Admiral Dalla can still cause incredible destruction, and she has a weapon no one else seems to have. She knows she's got nothing to lose."
"I should have sacrificed myself," Kip said. "I could have killed her with my bare hands when I was on the Gorgon." He lowered his voice